go ahead.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge with a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I am Donny Air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. This is MJ Network, and it's beautiful outside. And we're going to talk about questions for the Golden Girl. Moira Walsh was a stellar comp, or was she? We'll find out more. Why people thought that she was the Golden Girl, or wasn't she? We have the author here, Dana Perry, a.k.a. Dick Belsky. Good morning, and welcome to MJ Network again. Glad to have you.
Hello, Fran. Good. Always good to be back.
Yeah, I know. this was an interesting one. The creating the prologue, which sets the stage for the events that follow, Moira Walsh, I don't know if this is typical, left her car, a police car, to meet someone, but we don't know who or why. So we follow her footsteps and leading us to believe that she was corrupt. How did you decide on this and she gets killed right then and there?
Well,
so
let me just
start it right
do a
off.
Quick, let me just do a quick overview first for people who, a lot of people, even people who follow me, get a little confused. So I was on here just a few weeks ago talking about my new book, R.G. Belsky, The Last Scoop, that I write in the Claire Carlson series. Those are written under my name. And what this is another series that I started. The first one came out last November, and this one involves another media character named Jesse Tucker. And I write these under the name of Dana Perry. So it's different name and different author and different character, but, you know, I'm still doing them. So the premise around this one, which is kind of like an age-old premise that I've always, you know, like been fascinated by in books, TV shows, movies, or in real life, is, you know, a police officer, a woman police officer in this case, because that's much more unusual, is found gunned down in the streets of New York City, and you know, it's on the face of it, it's a terrible tragedy, and she's a hero cop and all that, and then as you begin peeling away the layers of the woman police officer, Moira Walsh, you find all sorts of interesting things and questions, and this is added to by the fact that she's the daughter of a very high-ranking police official. She comes from a respected police family, but then as you begin digging into it, you begin to realize that she might have been involved in some some despicable kind of activities and some corruption, and the question, of course, is did that, and even if she turned out she was a corrupt cop and had done bad things, is that why she was killed? And that's basically what my character Jesse Tucker spends the whole book trying to sort out, because there's multiple questions here, which is, you know, what is the truth about Moira Walsh? And number two, did it have anything to do with the death? Because, you know, a police officer can be killed on the streets for no reason. You know, in a novel, it's always better, obviously, when there's a complex reason. And so that's what Jesse's trying to find out.
Yeah, I know. I like Jesse. She's so much like me. It's frightening. No, seriously. She's more like me than Claire. So she's not going to give up until she gets the answers. And doesn't matter who she has to step on. Which is really good. That makes me
feel better. Well, I think Jesse, I think if I were to compare the two, I think Jesse is a little nicer than Claire, too, because I like the Claire character, but the Claire character is very edgy and very in your face.
Yeah.
And Jesse can be, too, but I think Jesse is, you know, and we've talked about this before, but, you know, it's the obvious question, you know, how much is Jesse like Claire? Well, I think they're alike a lot journalistically, in the sense that they're all they're both trying to get the story, but I think they're different in terms of their personality.
They are, but I still like her. So
yeah,
you made
I do too.
Yeah, you made a comment. The summertime is dangerous, people. There are more murders. How come there are more murders in the summertime and
people
get
upset? I don't. You know, I Well, there's some obvious reasons. I started the book off with that premise. I think I don't know in front of me, but I think the first line is something like, so many big crimes in New York City always seem to happen in the summertime. And I went through, I mean, obviously Son of Sam was the summer of Sam. There was the Preppy murder case where a young girl was murdered in Central Park. And that became a sensational story, and that was in the summertime. And there have been other cases like that. And in a fictional sense, Jessie Tucker, when she had been attacked in the first book, that also happened in the summer. And I think it's just the premise of the long hot summer. People are outside more. They're out of their houses, so there's more chance for things to happen. The heat tends to get people's tempers going, whereas cold, you're just trying to get inside. And I went back and I read a number of pieces that had been written about that, and yes, there does seem to be always There is a lot of crime in the summer, and I think all those play a role. But I'm not talking. I mean, when I'm talking about a lot of crime, I mean, I'm not talking about street crime, like some guy gets mad at some other guy because he parks his car in the wrong place or something like that. In this case, I'm talking about big crimes, and I just wanted to set up this tone that, when you have a big crime, a la Son of Sam, Summer of Sam. It sort of seems like they happen in the summer. Now that isn't always the case. Others have it, but for the purposes of the book, I really focused a lot on the summer, and even all the way to the end of the book, it's all about how the summer does kind of strange things to people, and a lot of crazy crimes seem to happen in the summertime.
You should walk around my neighborhood. Everybody's cranky. And complaining. Nobody smiles anymore. It's really sad. I went into a supermarket that normally has 1,000 people online, and they said, we have reserved whatever at 8:00 in the morning. I go, I may not be old enough, but they didn't even know the difference. I just in and out. I said, finally got my sauce. Well, everybody's cranky and nasty too. So. She decided, Jessie, when she gets a bug, she gets a bug, she wanted to do Moira's story, and there was no worry that she was not going to get the story. So Danny's a pain in the neck. Why does he give her a hard time when she makes him look good?
I'm sorry, when who makes him look good?
Jessie makes
Danny,
look
oh,
good.
Danny, oh, Danny, oh, Danny, I'm sorry, her editor, yeah. Yeah, so Danny Knowlton is an ambitious young editor she works for. I don't know that he gives her a hard time. I mean, it's more like she has just gone through a big emotional story.
Yeah.
And it's been big for her, but it's also been big for Danny Knowlton because he gets, a lot of the acclaim because he's her editor. So she's kind of, his golden goose or whatever. So she makes a line very early on. Danny is very worried about my well-being, not because he's a great human being, because he's an editor, and editors aren't really great human beings. It's a very practical thing, and he just feels that he doesn't want to plunge her back into this. And then the other part of it is he doesn't necessarily think that Moira Walsh is a story. He thinks the story. I mean, the story is 3 weeks old by the time Jessie gets into it, and the editor Danny would like her to do a different story, a new story, a fresh story. But Jessie is kind of like she focuses on something, and for a lot of reasons, she decides she wants to go and find out the real story about Moira Walsh. So they butt heads a little bit at the beginning, but as the book goes on, so one of the things I try and do in this book is show the office politics in a newsroom, and there's a couple main characters. There's the city editor, who's an older guy, and then there's Danny Knowlton, who's his deputy, who's a young ambitious guy who wants his job, and then there's a woman managing editor, Lorraine Malinsky, who's also got all sorts of issues in terms of like. Making sure, nobody takes her job. So it's basically the three of them all trying to deal with Jesse on the story, but also kind of like playing politics within the office. And I mean that isn't just at the beginning of the book. That carries through in the book. And I did that because I've lived through that so many times in real newsrooms. I mean, you know, office politics is office politics in any office, and it's certainly very, very prominent in a big city newsroom.
It should be in education. It's even worse. Seriously.
Right. It's everywhere. I spent time in the academic world, and I was surprised at, you know, the same thing. You know, wherever you go, you find it, you know.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know. So, Moira's father, I didn't like him at all. Just get that straight.
Well,
people,
that was sort of the
like
yeah, that was sort of the idea.
He's got, oh my God, he's very powerful, he's cold, and insisted that
right.
Moira become a police officer when she really wanted to be something else, which probably was more exciting and a lot safer in the science department. So,
yeah.
Why is he
well,
so
you know,
cold?
He,
and he, it's so sad. Yeah. I don't like
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he's like an old fashioned authoritative father, and I don't know that he's, you know, you can decide when you read the book if he's a bad guy or not. He's kind of, you know, true blue all the way, you know, like the code of the police, his family, and but he doesn't really, you know, represent feelings. He doesn't really recognize feelings in people, and it's not that he doesn't love Moira, but he basically, like, even after she dies, he's just very upper lip. She did her duty, you know, and all this kind of stuff, rather than showing emotion. And, you know,
yeah.
that's – and one of the reasons I wanted to create that character is because, you know, as you will know, as Jesse begins digging into Moira Welsh's past, she begins to discover – that there's also secrets in the Walsh family involving, you know, other stuff from the past in the family itself, and this may or may not play a role in what happened to Moira Welsh. So to do that, you have to create. I had to create the character of the father, who was on the face of it, you know, Mr. Law and Order, but you know, beyond that, it was a sort of emotionless guy, and you didn't know what he would be capable of doing. To get what he wanted, even within his own family.
Yeah, he did. It reminds me of my mother that said, "You're going to be a teacher, and you have no choice."
Right.
I really
right.
didn't have a choice, but that's okay.
Right. Well, in the book, and you find out very quickly, he had a son and a daughter, and the son dies tragically early on, and so he decides Moira has to be a cop, and whether or not
died,
she
yeah.
might not have wanted to, you know, it's like. It creates a thing, and then I'm sure this is going to be one of your next questions. One of the reasons that Jesse finds this story so fascinating when she starts getting into it is Jesse herself has a troubled relationship with her father. She has no relationship with her father because she never
yes,
knew her
right.
father, and she has a lot of questions. And so when she starts reading about everything, finding out everything that happened to Moira Welsh between her and her father, and she actually says at one point, like, I don't know, I thought I was the worst because, like, I never could find out, you know, anything about my father. He was gone before I ever knew him. But then she said, but then I read about Moira Welsh and her father, so what's worse, having no father or a bad father, you know? But so she bonds very quickly with the Moira Welsh character, you know, the dead character, and begins to show a great deal of sympathy and compassion for what she's gone through, mainly because she herself has had such difficult issues with dealing with her own father, even though they're completely different kind of issues.
Well, wait till they read the book. That's all I'm going to say. That
I hope
was
so,
a,
that yeah.
was a, that was a shocker, yeah. I said, oh, my God, really? So Michelle Cardona works with her. How come she agrees to help her find information? Because I guess the hardest thing to be with a reporter is to have sources in the police department or sources even in under your own newspaper. So how come she agrees to help her?
Well, because they work on the same paper and they sit next to her. You know, reporters do have a camaraderie, especially you know if you work on your paper, you're a team. The Michelle Cardona character is she's like I you know, and again, I've known a lot of people, men and women like this. She's a very ambitious kind of like I'll do anything to get a story kind of, well, you know, much more so than even Jesse will do it, but Jesse's much more responsible. Michelle will do like almost anything to get a story. And part of that involves, and this is why Jesse begins relying later on more on her as the book goes on. Part of that involves that she's even like made friends with people in the mobsters and stuff. Michelle has, and at some point when Jesse begins to suspect that there's like mob involvement possibly in all this, she goes to Michelle, and Michelle helps, you know, takes her to a mob restaurant and introduces her to people and helps her get, you know, an interview and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, reporters are competitive for the story, but if you work on the same paper, you're also working together. And you know, they have I don't know that Jesse and Michelle are, like, friends, because Jesse has friends, but they're certainly friends at the paper. They get along, and Michelle, like, just, you know, goes out of her way to help Jesse.
Okay, now we're going to get to, this was interesting. Her partner is Billy Renfro, and we learned that he looked at Moore's death, and he blames himself for the death because he was there for an hour getting pizza.
Yeah.
He went to a pizza place, and you're not supposed to leave your partner like that, so he feels guilty. How come? What, he did something wrong, right? He didn't follow the protocol.
Well, I mean, again, how to find out what he, you know, how badly he did anything wrong, you know, you have to read the book, but basically, I set up, you know, one of the things I try and do in all my books is, you know, you set up a lot of questions at the beginning, and then she tries to find answers. One of the questions at the beginning is, why was she, where was her partner when she was killed? And the answer is, they had taken a quote, dinner break. So they had gone to this pizza place, and he had gone in, he'd ordered a pizza, and then he came back, and supposedly he didn't see her, and he ate some pizza, and then he finally went looking for her. Anyway, the whole thing took an hour. Now, you know, I basically on the face of it, there's nothing terribly wrong on that, but, you know, this idea that if your partner is out of your sight or you don't know where they are, you really need to find out where they are in a hurry, and you shouldn't have waited an hour. And so that begins the first questions that Jesse has is to, is there more going on here? Why did it take him so long before he even started looking for it? Did he know something or know what she was doing or anything? And so these are all the questions that I raise, and then you know, obviously get answered at different points during the thing. But you know, one of the things is the you know, and you know this from every movie and TV show you see about police, the bond between partners is a very strong one on many levels, and it certainly was between her and Billy Renfro, and he's so you don't know exactly if he had any not necessarily that he would have involvement in her death, but that he knew something that he's not telling that led to it. You don't know that for sure, but what you do know is he's guilty about something, and Jesse's not sure about what, but he's very uncomfortable when he talks about it, and she's convinced that he's not telling the entire story, and so, you know, she needs to find out how he fits into the role, because as her partner, he would have known everything about her more than anybody.
That is very true. Yeah, we'll get back to the character I don't like, which is the father. Mm-hmm. This father, he's very, the head of a police department or a deputy commissioner, is a very powerful man. And he manages to get his offices. This is exciting because I'm pretty sure it still exists today, the Blue Wall of Silence. And they don't give up each other, right? So that's one thing, that they're not going to side with Mike Walsh. And why does she want to meet with him? That interview was really bone-chilling.
Well,
when
she
finally does
meet
with him.
She wants to meet with him because he's the father of Moore Walsh, and she wants to find out more about Moore Walsh. But I mean, I think the running question that goes through much of the book is there's real evidence that Moore Walsh was corrupt, taking payoffs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And her father had made a reputation on being Mr. Clean and rooting out all corruption. So the questions that keep coming up and, you know, that you know are not answered really until the end of the book are, number one, is Moore Walsh corrupt? And number two, if she is it such an embarrassment to her father that he doesn't want anyone to know that he wants to be thought as a hero? Or in the most, in you know, worst case scenario, could he have killed his own daughter because, you know, she was embarrassing him because he was corrupt, you know? Or could he really be corrupt too, and could she have been trying to expose his corruption as part of, you know? So all these things are playing around, and at various points during the book, Jesse, you know, thinks one thing and then thinks another, but you know, you're never know for sure about Mike Walsh, you know, underneath this big cop stuff, this hero cop stuff, what is he really all about? And the fact that you don't like him, you know, makes me pleased as an author, because, you know, if you create a character that is that unlikable, then I guess you've sort of done your job.
Well, Billy Benito, whatchamacallit, the partner, he calls in sick. And wouldn't somebody realize after a few days that was kind of odd?
Billy Renfro.
Renfro,
Billy,
yeah, that's what
Billy
I'm saying.
Renfro, yeah.
Nobody called to see that he was, you know, not.
Well, we don't know
not,
that.
Not
I don't
there.
don't really know that. I don't really know that. I mean, he called in sick. I mean, sometimes you call in sick every day. You have to call in sick. You can't just say I'm sick for the next week. I think the point is he had come back to work, and the precinct had said to him, they had decided he wasn't ready to come back after his partner was killed, and so they gave him, you know, like some sick leave, and so he's home, and that's why Jesse decides to go out to his house after. After she gets a lot more questions, she realizes that first interview, she has more things to ask him. So because he's not at the precinct, she goes, finds his house and goes to his house to try and ask those questions. So, and I won't get into more than that, but, you know, obviously he's still, he has not been able to function well because of what happened to his partner. So he's basically home on sick leave.
I wonder if how many real police officers feel the same way, but I don't think that they're going to
find out. Well, there's a lot of, you know, you read,
I know.
There's an awful lot of, you know, things go on with police officers in terms of mental issues and things. I mean, you know, and more so now these days.
I can understand why. So Peter Ventura, he's interesting too. He's a good source of information.
Yeah.
He's a great, he's a crack up.
Peter Ventura is based on a couple of real life journalists I knew in my time at the New York Post. He's basically this colorful old time news guy.
I like him, who
drinks like a fish, and he was kind of like he's this legendary guy who broke all sorts of big stories, would drink all night, has all sorts of great newspaper stories, and again, I've worked with people like that, and I, you know, loved hanging out with them, and that's kind of like what Jessie does. She likes going to a bar with Peter Ventura and listening to his stories, but then she leaves at some point because she knows that eventually, that the drinking will start, and he's now kind of in the decline. You know, he doesn't break that many stories, and he falls asleep a lot at his desk, but he's kind of, people sort of let him do it because he's kind of a legendary, colorful figure, and yet he still does know people, and he does have sources, so when she needs something, she goes to him for information, and as crazy drunk as he could be, she trusts him. So, you know, that's why I had that relationship. But I love that character because I've known a few Peter Venturas in my time.
I'd like to see him break a story with Jesse just to prove to him everybody he could still do it. I like the one that nobody thinks can handle it anymore. So tell us about, I had mixed feelings about this guy, Lieutenant Detective Aguirre. Yeah,
that's
mixed
another
feelings
guy.
About
you
this guy.
You should have mixed feelings about him. So that's another
one. Oh, good. You
I
see,
so,
I got this right.
Yeah,
very good.
Yeah. So I he's a carryover from my first book, you know, the first Jesse book. So
yeah.
he's in the first one. And he's the guy she goes head-to-head with in the first book. And he's another, you know, he's a young up-and-coming police lieutenant, very ambitious, and he's a bit of a player. You know, in the first book, he's hitting on Jesse and calling her, you know, making kind of sexist remarks to her. And he's, you know, he's a kind of a, like, not a, you know, like an overbearing guy who's kind of very good looking and very successful and knows to dress as well. But he, you know, we find out in the first book, he's also a good cop. And at the end of the first book, you know, he helps basically at one point in the first book, he saves Jesse's life. So you know, she actually, when she has to go back to him in this book, she actually does make the line where she says, you know, I really detest the Gary, you know, da da da. I hate everything. He's everything I can't stand in a man, da da da. But he did save my life. So there, you know, so there is that in his favor. So she always has this balance with him. And I think, you know, I think as he's come out in the second book, I think his good points outweigh his bad points. But he's, you know, they have somehow created a relationship for what it is. So he's not her favorite person, but I think she respects what he can do as a police officer. And they basically have utilized each other in both books.
Now, she decides that she's going to take over. She's going to backtrack every place that Moira went to on her last night. She goes to every single bar, every single place, and she finds out some very interesting information as she's
right.
going.
And
then
she also meets a love interest along the way.
I know. I had a question mark. And, you know, in order for Jesse to go out with this guy, if she does decide to go, she's got to pass what my sister did to me, which is the clipboard test. Everybody I went out with had to pass my sister's clipboard test to see if they passed the pass inspection. So wait till my nephews decide to have a girlfriend. They're going to have to pass the clipboard test. So Jesse, this person has to pass my clipboard test. So she decides to follow everywhere that she went, and she meets this guy, which is interesting. So how does she compile her facts? And she went into these places, and that's where she finds out that she thinks that Moira is corrupt, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
She learns
right. So she goes
what happened.
To.
Yeah.
She goes to a lot of, you know, she goes. She digs deeper into the record. I mean, on the face of it, Moira Walsh and her partner had made like 5 or 6 routine stops. On that night. But then when Jesse looks into them and starts talking to people, you know, like one of them is at a strip club, and the manager is telling, it says, oh, she was here to, you know, because we had a fight and we just had to call the cops or something. But then one of the strippers tells Jesse, no, that's not what it, you know, like the other stuff was, you know, what was going on. So she begins to get a real picture of things that were going on in those nights, including, you know, potentially corrupt activities by Jesse. And at the last place she stops, the manager of the restaurant turns out to be a young, good-looking guy who starts hitting on her. And then so he becomes a key character through the rest of the book, because she's going back and forth between wanting to have a romance with him, but also, like, questioning his role in everything, because he's running a restaurant, and is he mobbed up? What does he know? What is he, you know, is he involved? And he begins to suspect that is he using her? But he's a kind of a key character, but also her big love interest, you know, all through the book and you know, and right till the very end.
I know, and I wasn't sure about him, but she really.
And
better be
and
careful.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, but I for whatever reason I had him because I enjoy doing this. He's a restaurant manager, but I also had him as an aspiring novelist, and he talks about trying to write novels and Hemingway and all this. So because I kind of thought that, you know, as you say, whether or not he's likable, to me that made him more likable because he was kind of like a dreamer, like he wanted to do something great. He wanted to write a great novel. So
well, if he likes particular authors, yes, we'll let him stay for a while anyway.
In the meantime, he's running a restaurant. But anyway, he's a I think he's a somewhat complex figure too, and he's another person that, as the book goes on, you're not sure whether he's good or bad.
Yeah.
As the book goes on, you're not sure whether he's good or bad for Jesse, and you're not sure whether he's good and bad in general. But I mean, look, I say this all the time, but it's like, I think when you're writing characters as an author, I know in books that I read that I like, and when I try and write them, you know, it's important that the characters all be flawed. That it's like, it's fine to have somebody who's a really good person or somebody who's a really evil person, but most of the characters, they need to be that sort of in between. You know, like most of us are. You know, they got good character, the good sides, bad sides. You know, and that you're never, and even the mob guy in this, the mob guy kind of plays this idea at first that he's always a man of the people and he's like a businessman, but then, you know, as Jesse gets deeper, she sees who this guy really is. I think it's a good idea. Like, I think it's a good thing when you read the characters and you're saying things like, I think I like that person, I don't think I like that person, you know, I'm not sure. But I try not to make most of them, other than maybe a mobster or something, try not to make most of them too black and white.
No, they weren't. So we have the private detective, Wallison, that claims that he knows who killed Moira.
Yeah,
that poor guy. And then she gets all the facts, right? She has her own nightmares about what happened to her. She gets all the facts, so she doesn't want to release the story, even though Danny tells her to. Why was she uncomfortable? Because she's got scruples. She definitely has morals and scruples.
I think because she knows by doing so she's going to smear Maura Walsh's memory, you know, I think there's a part of her that identifies with Maura Walsh, who she's never met, but sort of identifies so strongly with her that she feels compassion. But I think also she's her reporter instinct tells her there's still something missing from the story. She doesn't have the whole story, and until she gets the whole story, she's not prepared to smear this woman's reputation. Now, someone like Danny Knowlton is like, he doesn't have that kind of, you know, humanity. He's just basically, let's get the good story. And Jesse can do that too, but she also, like, she cares. So there's an ongoing back and forth between all the editors and Jesse as to what to do. And one of the things that Jesse does in this book as well as the other book, which is not terribly realistic because most reporters wouldn't do it, and if they did, they'd get fired, which is she doesn't tell her editors everything. She withholds evidence even from them, you know. If I was an editor for years, you know, at the Daily News and the Post, if a reporter did that to me, you'd probably fire them. But, you know, in terms of a novel, it makes it more interesting. So she holds stuff back, and then at a certain moment, she'll reveal that to the editor and say, well, actually, I know this. And then sometimes they'll say, well, how long have you known that for? You know, and then she'll either lie or she'll admit it. But that's where you get back into the whole office politics of all this.
That's why I liked her, because she's had scruples. But so what if you get in trouble for not telling just yet? So then she will find out about something else. We meet Greg Stoffel. I'm not crazy about him either. And
right.
Chief Palumbo. Well, there are two of them. He has a relationship with Chief Palumbo, and why the chief's son has this position. But she finds out about Patrick Walsh when she goes up there.
Yeah, this is. I'm sure this would get very complicated for anybody, you know, listening to it. But hopefully, when you read the book, it flows
really
naturally.
Good.
Yeah. But one of the at some point while she's investigating Maura Walsh's death, she discovers that that her father, Mike Walsh, had a son who died at as a young boy at their home in upstate New York in a tragic gun accident, and for some reason, at first this doesn't seem like it would be relevant in any way, but at some point it keeps sort of popping up, and she begins to like decide to look into that, you know, because it's like you had two people who died by gun, both more on the streets and this little kid, 15 years earlier, And as she begins looking into the death of this little boy, which is not considered suspicious, just a terrible tragedy, he finds his father's gun in a closet and accidentally goes off and kills him. It's just a tragedy. But then she begins getting more questions about what actually happened to the little boy, and is there more to that story? And so the two people you talked about, the chief of police at the time in the small town where the boy died, his name Palumbo, and Stovall was his deputy. And the Palumbo guy is now dead. Stovall is now moved and doing something else. But so she goes back to this deputy Stovall, who investigated the original case of the little brother who died 15 years earlier. Again, just not knowing exactly what she's looking for, but trying to determine if there's any possible connection between that. And she, at some point, she discovers or decides that there is. And then she has to figure out exactly why that would be. And so she the only living person from that investigation that she has in the beginning is this deputy Stovall. And so she interviews him once, and he gets a very convincing story. And then, like with all the things she does, she winds up getting more facts, and then she realizes that some of the things she was told by him don't hold up. So she needs to go back to him again. And, you know, I mean, that's a lot of what being a reporter is. You get facts, you take them at face value, you investigate further, and then if the facts don't hold up, you go back and keep asking questions. And that's kind of what Jesse does in all the way through, and all the books. She just keeps asking question after question, and that's what real reporters do. So that's one of the things I like to convey in the book. But look, I think it's a very complicated plot in The Golden Girl. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to not scare anyone away who's reading it, I think when you're reading it, it's not that complicated. I mean, I think it's complicated. It's got a lot of twists. But I think when you read it, I think one thing flows all right from another. One of the greatest compliments I got from some critic on this one from on Goodreads or NetGalley or something was somebody said, you know, it flows so well that it sounded like Dana Perry or me. Dana Perry literally sat down at the computer and didn't get up until the book was finished. And, you know, because that's what you want to do. I mean, I'm not trying to – I mean, I've read novels that are complicated, and you're talking about, well, now what happened? Who – I got to go back and find that. So I try that everything makes sense, but it's not a straight line. You know, I'm not going from A to Z directly. I'm making a lot of detours along the way.
Well, that's the truth. And to give you another compliment, seriously, I'm a reading specialist. So I've always worked with kids when they have a, you know, complex plot with the graphic organizer to get them, you know, the main idea, the details, the characters. I didn't have to do that with this. I just sat down and read it.
Yeah.
In 2 hours.
No, I've even with, cause you know, I when I write books, I try and write the kind of book that that I like to read, and so if there's something in books that I read that I don't like, I try and avoid that, because I mean I have read, and even by some really good authors, and there's some really good books, they sometimes can get so complex that I literally will you know, you have to go back and you say, well, wait a minute now who was that again, why is that there, and so when I'm writing my books, I try my best to avoid that, and you know, and one of the ways you can do that, and you can overdo this too, is because it's a first person character in Jesse, you know, there are various points during the book where she will basically rehash in her mind what she knows. Okay, or to a boss, she said, okay, here's what we know so far. We know Maura Walsh did this. We know her father did this. We know her partner did this. And now you can run into a danger there of being too repetitive, but I like that idea because I think, you know, it's the way a person thinks. Like you compile a bunch of facts. You say you go out and you're trying to find something. You go, okay, now what do I know? Okay, I know this, I know this, I know this. So you put it in a logical thing, and so I do that a lot through the book, so that hopefully the readers and again I don't get. You know, I've gotten complaints about the books, or people don't, but I don't get many people who say, "Oh, like I had no idea what was going on." You know, and I try and work on that.
I wouldn't worry about that. If they don't, they need to go back to school and get some reading comprehension. Seriously. No, seriously. As a matter of fact, my uncle's 99. He is reading The Last Scoop because I sent it to him.
I know. You told me. That's great.
He does. Uncle Len is probably going to call me and discuss it because he does. And he's also reading the Peter May book. If you haven't read Lockdown, it's fantastic about a real pandemic.
I don't want to read. I'm not interested in reading about pandemic. I know people do and watching movies, but I have enough real life issues. Yeah, I don't need to.
You know, what happens is that I get some books and I don't know. And then, like you said, some books have so many plots. Well, there were three that I read this week that have over 800 pages, and I'm going like, you really reading this and understanding it? Yep, I do. We try.
So we've got
a couple of characters that are kind of like question marks. We have about 19 minutes. Billy's wife is kind of strange. Moira's mother is awful. She's a little weird, too.
But when you find out
about her, I felt so bad for her because I liked her.
Well, but think about this, though, you know, like if you've already
she's
talked
married
about
to
how
Mike.
Much you don't like, right, you don't like this autocratic police guy. So what's his wife going to be like? Well, clearly she's got to be, you know, like really emotionally, you know, a mess based on everything. And the wife of the Billy Ranfield character is a kind of over the top. Look, when you're creating characters, again, you know, you don't want to create a dull character. You don't want to create a character that's just
she's not dull.
Oh, she's a very nice woman and she does everything fine, and you know that's not very interesting. So like the Billy Renfro, who's the partner, the troubled partner of Moira Walsh, when she finds the wife, you discover that the wife has left Billy Renfro, and she's kind of trying to build this whole new life for herself with a new hairdo and new nails and new friends and a new apartment, and she's like really into being but she's kind of phony, but she's kind of like, you know, and she's mouthing all these platitudes, and you know, I like creating characters like that who are just kind of larger than life, you know, and that's something, that's a big part of when I'm writing a book that I need to do, you know, I need to, and the other, not only do you need that character, that's the same as like the detective, the Frank Walton, who's a, you know, kind of down and dirty PI, not only do you need those kind of characters, but you got to make sure they're different too, because you don't want a character like Billy Renfro's wife, who's trying to do all this stuff of become her own woman and all this stuff at the age of in her 50s and kind of making a fool of herself but still not realizing it. You know, if you got that character, you know, you can't have another character the same way. You know, if you got one Peter Ventura who's a falling down drunk in the office, you can't have two. So that's why I do Michelle Caradona, who's like this ambitious young reporter, and then Peter Ventura, who's this, you know, down and out experienced reporter. And you've got Danny Knowlton, who's an ambitious editor, and then the city editor is not ambitious at all. He just wants to get through the day alive. So when I'm writing a book, it's such a huge part of what you do. You're trying to create. Mm-hmm. You've got the main character, but to get the people around her is really important, and is really sometimes can be difficult to do. But the greatest pleasure of that is whenever one of these characters are coming up, you are saying to me, I don't like him. I like him. I'm not sure about him. And that's, like I said, that is the exact emotion that, you know, and I've told you this before. I mean, there's nothing better than getting emotion from a reader. And it doesn't have to be, I love Claire, I love Jesse. And back with my Claire series, somebody wrote a review. Somebody I actually knew, but another author, and he wrote a review, and he said at the very end, he said, you know, something to the effect of, on one hand, I love Claire, but on the other hand, she makes me so mad. There are times I just want to take her and throttle her and tell her to shut up, you know, and getting madder. And I remember I read that, and I said, oh, my God, that is exactly what you want. You know, you want people to be mad at the character, to you know, get pissed at the character, to like the character. You know, in the end, you want them to like the character, but I mean, like you think, I mean, I don't know, I know in my life, people I know, friends and stuff, you know, most of the people you know, you have all sorts of emotions about. Oh, they mm-hmm. they annoy me so much when they do that. Why do they do that? But you still care about them. You love them. You like them. You know, very few people are, oh, they're so nice. They are perfect. You know what I mean? And certainly in a book, you don't want that because it wouldn't be very interesting.
No, they would put me to sleep. But before I forget, Monday, the Enemy of the Doves author will be on the show. The 24th, we have a panel of 5 people. We're going to talk about voice in first person. On the 25th, I'm going to brave this. We're going to talk about police reform. We're going to talk about what's being done and what some of these law enforcement officers feel should be done. Should be interesting. Charles Salzberg, Chris Carlson, and Vincent Zandre. And he said he's got the scoop. And to end June on the 30th, I thought this was original. Pastor Michael Jones, we're going to talk about how we can, as a people, can get along better, how we can, you know, use a little meditation and prayer, and how we can lift ourselves up in a time of this pandemic to start to smile again. I thought that would be a cool way to end June. That was just my idea. And there was so much negative going on in the world, I decided I needed to do something positive for everybody. So, this is another character that scared the grandma, and it was Benedetto. How did you create the scene between him and Jesse? She's a brave child. I mean, that was interesting.
Yeah,
and then we're
going to
talk about
guy.
Something else. Yeah,
I got to tell you, I love writing, you know, and I mean, people might say they're sort of characters or stereotypes of mobsters,
like
but they are. I mean, I've always loved, I mean, you know, you watch, I mean, everything, you know, it's like, you know, my favorite movies are Goodfellas and you watch The Sopranos and I mean, you know, all mobsters. And the truth is, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, which is that, and you know, this idea too that, and this character is similar to somebody in Goodfellas or The Godfather or Tony Soprano, which is on the face of it they can be very charming, you know. I mean, it's like nobody mm-hmm. it's not like somebody walks in with a gun and start, you know, like shoots on the face of it. Like in this case, he helps he'd help Michelle get an apartment, you know, because she needed one, and he provides like really great Italian food and all that stuff, and you sort of think, well, this guy's, you know, and I mean, this also goes back to the to the real life days in Brooklyn of John Gallo. Everybody in the neighborhood thought he was this great guy because he did all these wonderful things. He helped children and all that stuff. But you don't, you just don't know what's going on behind, behind the scenes, you know. So it's fun to write those kind of characters, and so that's what Benito is. And in the end, you see his there's two confrontations between them. One of which is verbal, which is scary, and then there's an actual confrontation, which is obviously a lot even scarier, where you really find out, you know, what a terrible guy he was, you know, so, or he is.
Well, before we end,
I meant John Gotti, you know, like, and again, you know, if you ever read any of the stories about Gotti, you know, I mean, charming.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
You know, Mr. Celebrity around time. I mean, I saw him once in a restaurant, and he was holding, you know, and I was in a restaurant where he was in Little Italy, and it was amazing. It was like a movie star, you know, and then you read about some of the stuff that actually happened, and it's a whole other thing. And so that's, you know, I mean, again, all you have to do is watch Tony Soprano. I mean, Tony Soprano's a likable guy, and yet he's a horrible killer, you know, on television, you know. And so I find those kind of people are really, really fun and interesting to write about. And I don't want to say easy, but they're actually a lot easier than a lot of characters because, you know, there's so much to draw on.
Well, I worked in a bowling center, and I won't tell you which ones I've met. I met a whole lot of them. And they belong to leagues and stuff, and I was really careful with anything that had to be. They loved me, but you know, you had to be really careful. And I said, "Oh my God, I didn't realize that who they were, but I didn't care." So we have two more characters. We've got to get into Wendy Carruthers because she hooks up with Wendy because she wants to learn about her past.
Yeah.
And then she learns about Sam Rawlings. And she said she gets to know him, but she gets to think something else about him, too.
Yeah. So, well, so I mean, again, there's for someone who hasn't read the book, I mean, this may seem overwhelming, like, oh my God, how many plots are there in there? But it's, you know, it does. There is a pretty straight line to it all. You know, one of the B plot, I guess you would call it, the subplot of the book is Jessie is trying to find out about her own father. Now her, she was raised by her mother, never knew her father, and the story that she'd always been told is that her father, went out to the store or something, like when she was first brought back from the hospital, and never came back, and she never knew what happened to him, and she was raised by her mother, and her mother, and she had all sorts of issues, and she always, you know, felt the loss of not having a father, and she'd never really looked into it, and because of all these things that are going on now with Maura Walsh and her father, she's kind of motivated, so she decides she really wants to find out about her father. So what she does is, and this was something I became interested because I had read another series by an author friend of mine about it, and it kind of inspired me. Well, I could get a subplot about, you know, the whole genealogy thing, you know, the whole thing of where people go online and do all the you know, you can go back into your ancestry and all that stuff and all these services. And you know, one of the things I found out is that apart from just doing that stuff, there are actually people who do this for a living. I mean, you can actually go and get an investigator who will look into your family past, and that's what Wendy Carruthers is. And Jesse goes to her and wants to see, find out what happened to her father 30 some years ago or whatever, when he walked out on her when she was just a little baby. And obviously that's a traumatic thing. And of course, you know, I'm probably not going to surprise anyone, but the answers Wendy Carruthers comes back with about the father are not the answers that Jesse expected. And that kind of stuns her even more and motivates her more into finding out the truth about her father. So this is all going on at the same time as she's doing the Maura Walsh story. But you know, the common bond is they both had troubled or non-existent relationships with their father. And so in addition to getting answers about Maura Walsh, Jessie is motivated to get answers about her own father before the end of the book.
Well, my mother-in-law died. We did a due diligence. It cost a fortune. I don't know why my brother-in-law's executor decided to do that. I found the relatives I didn't even know were alive ever. Never heard of them. And you know what happens? They creep out of the woodwork. Because they have to, she had this investigated. It cost about $10,000 to do this out of the money. And she went and she called all these people to tell them that my mother-in-law died. And 10 of them called me to find out if they could get something from her estate. I hung up on them.
Yeah.
This is what happened. I mean, you don't know them, and it's scary. So, before we end, the pieces of the murders come together, and we find out more about Patrick and a whole bunch of stuff. So how did you get it all to come together between Moira's death and Patrick's death and everything? How did you tie it up? Because that was hard before we found out what you're going to do to my Jesse next.
Yeah, I do. I mean that is the toughest part. I mean, one of the toughest parts is, you know, you know when I'm writing a book like that, I'm raising all these mysteries, opening all these questions as I'm writing it, and then at the end of the book, you know, you have to tie them together. I mean, not the only author who's done this, and as I'm raising the questions, you know, I've told the story, I was on a panel with Hank Felipe Ryan a year or two ago at BoucherCon, and we were talking about that, because she writes the same way, and she's like, yeah, I ask all this, and then at some point, I'm like, I have no idea, you know, like, how I'm going to, you know, and I'm never going to be able to come up with, you know, and then you do, and that's kind of the way, exactly the same way I write. And one of the things I think that helped me with this book is because, so this book is put out by Bookature, which is a big online publishing company in the audio, Taunton Online Audio. It is in paperback too, but mostly online and audio. And they had put out the first book, the Jesse book, in November, and so they wanted you know, this one to come out fairly quickly, within 5 or 6 months afterward. So to do that, I had like I basically had to write this in a 4 month period, and I think I agreed to do it in at the end of May, early June, and
I remember.
And I had to turn it in, and I had to turn it in by the end of September. So I basically had, you know, normally a book can take a year to write, and I did this. So by the nature of it, I was forced to really work intensely on it. I mean, in the sense that every day I had to keep doing. I couldn't, you know, I wasn't like taking day off and all of this. I just, every day I was just, and I think that helps the book, because I think therefore, you know, it's just got the focus then. This idea that somebody sits down at a computer and doesn't get up until the book's over. Well, obviously you're not going to do that. But this book was written in a very concentrated period and very focused. So, but pulling all those threads together at the end is difficult, and you have to walk a fine line between, you can't be unrealistic. You can't like have somebody just come out of left field and say, "Oh, that person did it."
Yeah,
but at the same time, you can't make it obvious, so people are like, "Well, so what's the point? I sort of knew that." So what you need to do is kind of like drop a hint. You know, the ideal thing is you drop a hint along the way of somebody, and it's not strong enough that anybody really recognizes it. But when you know the answer, you go back and, "Oh, that's right. I remember in chapter 12 they said that." You know, so that's what you you strive to do, because, you know, this book isn't, the ending isn't black and white. It is like your pal Mike Walls, who, you know, it isn't like, so is he a good guy or a bad guy? Well, by the end of the book, you realize he's a bit of both. You know, he's not, you know, he's, it's a little hard to say. It's a little hard to say. And I don't know, other than Benito, who's the mob guy, he's a bad guy, but I don't know that any of the other characters in the book, several of whom commit serious crimes, but I don't know that any of them are really bad people, but they're just some people who did some things that were bad.
So tell everybody where they could find out more about you, and when am I getting another Jesse book?
Well, they can find out about me at www.rgbelsky.com. So just, and so, I mean, I do put, you know, Dana Perry stuff on that website, because it's me as well as myself. There's also a Dana Perry Facebook page, and there's a Dana Perry author Twitter page, which is in addition addition to my R.G. Belsky stuff. So, you know, but I mean, there is stuff, you know, dedicated to the Dana Perry books, and but if you want to know more about me, you can also look up the R.G. Belsky stuff. I'd also like to just push, as you know, we've done, and you've been great in the past, but you know, my big new book from as R.G. Belsky is The Last Scoop. It's been out about 6 weeks now, and it's a Claire Carlson book, and I've gotten a lot of great response and attention to that. I think next week, I know you like print copies, but I think next week, I'm thinking it's June 23rd, but somebody can check. It's going to be an Amazon Kindle Daily deal, which means people can get it for like 99 cents. But, you know, get the hardcover is beautiful. It's actually out in hardcover, and, you know, and that's terrific. And in terms of Dana Perry, I'm just in the process, actually, of signing a deal with Bookature to do two more Dana Perry books but they're not written yet. I mean, they would be written in the next year and would be out these are actually not, and hopefully there'll be more Jesse. These are actually going to involve a different character that we've created, and but they will be two more Dana Perry books, and there'll be more Claire Carlson. But so right now, if you like my writing, you know, get the last scoop with Claire Carlson and grab the Golden Girl by Dana Perry. And the Golden Girl, again, for people unlike you, like for most of the rest of the world these days, Fran, who read it online, the Golden Girl is really, 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 really cheap online. It's I don't want to say the price because I could be wrong, but it's like just a couple bucks, you know, at most, you know. So
that's
it's real easy.
Read, however,
it's real easy.
I like having the book in front of me so I could write and underline it, but there's about 10 people that want the copy I have, and I told them Amazon will be more than happy to sell you the Kindle or get your own copy.
And also, the great thing, and I know you've done this, but I mean, you know, also the important thing is, which I tell everybody, because, you know, a lot of people, and it's great, and they'll say, oh, I really liked your book, and I'll, like, say, okay, just put something on Amazon, just post something, because the more of those you get, and it can be, you know, it can be two words. It can be a good book, you know, or something, you know, 4 stars, whatever. It's just those reviews really, you know, are important in terms of the logarithms or whatever of how they do stuff. So, you know, it's like I know a lot of people who tell me they like the book, but it's like hard to convince, you know, like just put something up, you know, just tell the world, you know.
Well, I told the world. It's just that Amazon took a while before they told it that I was great. They think I'm wonderful anyway, thank God. But I want to thank you so much for today.
Thanks,
everybody. Grant. It's beautiful outside. I know you're going to be on the panel show next week, and if you decide you want to brave it on Thursday, let me know. Because
I'll
be
do the panel. When is the panel next week? Again, tell me the
date. It's on Wednesday, the 24th at 10. With Tom Walsh and a few other people, and if you decide you want to do the one on Thursday that's going to brave it, let me know, and I'll be more than happy to have you join us.
All right, Fran.
Thank you so much.
Always,
have a great
day.
Always
fun to be on the show. Thanks, Fran. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.